This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Charlie Pellegrino, to help me, the author and the explorer, to help me unpack a new story of Pompeii and Herculaneum. It is October, November, 79 AD, maybe. And Mount Vesuvius, the volcano, begins an eruption seen from a naval base nearby. Pliny the Elder, commanding this naval base, sees the cloud emerging from the Vesuvius cone. He then gathers together, we're told by his nephew, Pliny the Younger, gathers together a rescue fleet of the biggest ships that he has. This is the Roman Navy, and pulls toward the shoreline. Already there are reasons that he can't get very close, but he tries. In the next hours will be a series of events revealed again and again by excavations at Pompeii and Herculaneum. Charlie, a very good evening to you. Because we can't even establish the date, what is the controversy about 79 AD and when this happened? Good evening to you, Charlie.
Yeah, it's a matter of also some of the uncertainty is over. We know that the growing season was longer. The climate in that part of the world was a bit warmer than it is even today. And so in one of the sister cities of Vesuvius, Oplontis, we know that the pomegranates were being harvested, but they shouldn't have been harvested until about October. And yet Pliny the Elder's nephew, who was there, he records the eruption as having happened in August. And so that's still to be sorted out. My tendency is to go along with the person who was there, with the eyewitness.
All right.
We had the same thing with the Titanic for years. Everyone said, no, the ship went down intact. But there were people like Marjorie Newell Robb, who was a child who was there and said she saw it break in half. And, people said, oh, no, lady, you're wrong. And she should have just said, hey, don't tell me what I saw. I tend to go with eyewitnesses.
We go to the evidence that is being excavated even as we speak. The most recent excavation gaining attention is that of a man between the ages of 40 and 50 found on the beach, dead instantly from the explosion that did not happen immediately. And the evidence of his success or failure is on the weapons and attendant belt and coins that are around him. However, I want to get to him because he didn't die at first. Pliny the Elder is pulling to shore. He cannot get very close to shore, and yet he's aware there's alarms. Why can't he reach Herculaneum, Charlie?
His ships could not get there because there was so much dust drifting over from where most of the pumice was falling on neighboring town of Pompeii. And on the water, pumice is a stone, but it's full of gas, and it actually floats. And so you had islands of pumice between Pliny the Elder's ships and Herculaneum. He was unable to get over there, and so they turned and ended up on a beach near, in the east of Herculaneum and Pompeii, where modern-day Sorrento is.
Right. So Herculaneum is to the northwest of Pompeii. Pompeii's inland, and Sorrentum at the time, is to the southwest of Pompeii, and that's where Pliny the Elder managed to get his ships. Now, the first day, there's ash falling on Pompeii and driving everyone out. Are they driven to the beach, or do they run in all directions, Charlie?
They probably went in all directions they could away from the ash, especially as it first began settling on Pompeii. And we do know from footprints that are actually preserved on the beach at Herculaneum that there was quite an exodus of people moving away from the direction of Pompeii and possibly out of Herculaneum also, and going toward the west.
All right. Now,
surge cloud came, it actually preserved even all those footprints.
The ash cloud is burying important details that will emerge over the course of many years, have been emerging for more than 100 years. Many details are buried in Pompeii. But let's go to the violent event itself, because it's a teaching event. It happens not at first, but about what time in the morning did the surge cloud hit, Charlie?
The first collapse of the eruption, which when the eruption momentarily, it only has to happen momentarily that this jet of ash straight up into the sky, superheated, that it just stalls for an instant. And then you get this downblast, you get this column collapse and this surge cloud, and it travels downhill along the ground at up to almost 200 miles an hour. And at 1 in the morning in the dark, this had to be incredibly frightening. It's hundreds of feet high. It's compressing the air in front of it, snapping off these huge cedar trees that were along the path to Herculaneum. And these trees would have been pinwheeling toward you if you were in Herculaneum. And the radiance of the ash cloud is so great that it's actually setting these trees on fire as they're wheeling toward you. So people on the beach, some men who were working with the soldier we found on the beach, three of them upturned an old damaged boat, which is the only boat that was left, and they turned it upside down and crawled under it. That gave them maybe about three more seconds of life. For everyone else, death came within about 1/200th to 1/400th of a second, faster than pain could even begin to register.
Let's go to the most recent discovery. This man face down on the beach with symbols that represent his vocation. He was accused of being a robber. Why, Charlie?
Right. I don't know exactly how that started. It became a kind of self-perpetuating textbook dogma and then a self-perpetuating documentary film dogma that he, because he had all this wealth and because his face had all these injuries and life had been rough to him, that he must have been someone who went around looting and in the last minute wanted to save lives. But one thing we now know is that the amount of money he had in his leather pouch was exactly what a month's pay would be for a high-level Praetorian, and also that he's at a marina where all the boats are, and all the boats are gone. To me, he always seems sort of like William Murdoch on the Titanic to the very last second of his life, launching those lifeboats away, and who also ended up wrongly maligned afterward. And the only boat left was this one damaged boat that apparently some men were trying to repair and maybe get some of these women and children who were behind in one of the arches under the marina to try to launch them away. And then it was all interrupted by the sudden arrival of this deadly surge cloud.
All right, let's call him Marcus. Marcus, we believe, is a Praetorian, which is special forces talk for Rome. He's got a month's wages in his leather pouch. He also has the weaponry and the symbols that are associated with the Praetorian Guard. So we can easily believe that he is organizing the evacuation from Herculaneum. This is in the middle of the night, right, Charlie? He's hit by that first surge.
I suspect he was, in the middle of the night is when he died, approximately 1 a.m. Suspect he and some people working with him were working to launch boats away and get people away from Herculaneum throughout the whole afternoon and into the evening and right up to the very last second of their lives.
Pliny the Elder did not survive. He died with his rescue flotilla to the south to Sorrento. They recovered his body. Is that correct?
Right. In fact, they safely got to shore and to a friend's house near what is modern-day Sorrento. And for a while, he was actually sleeping in a room until the ash started getting deep. And he was known as someone who could snore very loud, and they heard him snoring behind the door before they woke him up and dug him out of the room. But he must have been quite a snorer to be able to be heard behind a door over the noise of an erupting volcano.
Did the Romans, the well-to-do, the elderly, the seniors, the scholars, did they know what was about to happen? Had they had stories about Vesuvius before?
No, they had no idea. The volcano had been dormant for a very long time. a few years earlier, there had been an earthquake, which was a sign that the volcano was awakening, and repairs to buildings were still going on right up to the day of the eruption. But they really had no idea. They knew some of the geology, Pliny the Younger recorded, and they knew that some of the buildings were using as cut stones, stones that were believed to have come out of the earth as molten glass at one time or another. But they did not know that the volcano could erupt and destroy multiple cities.
I'm speaking to Charlie Pellegrino, the author and explorer, about a discovery of a Praetorian Guard hero. We don't know his name, but in any event, he was attempting to get off as many people as possible from Herculaneum until he was hit by the cloud. When we come back, what do we know about that cloud? It connects to what we've learned from the 9/11 tragedy of 2001. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and Charles Pellegrino, the explorer and author, is here to help me unpack a new detail from the tragedy of Vesuvius, 79 AD, either August or October and November, it's unclear, and a man discovered on the beach, a Praetorian Guard hero, attempting to rescue people. He was killed in the surge, hundreds of feet high, hundreds of meters high, superheated surge, coming off of Vesuvius early in the morning. But you tell me, Charlie, that why we know anything about that surge is from what happened 9/11/2001. How so?
Well, a lot of what we were able to see and confirm, in fact, what my group, what we were doing in Ground Zero was exactly volcano physics, because when it was all caught on film, the whole process of column collapse, downblast, surge cloud, this was the first time that the whole process was actually caught on film of volcano surge cloud physics, even when from the North Tower, the cloud raced over the water, which Pliny the Younger, when he described what he saw, many volcanologists and scientists over the years said, well, that couldn't happen. But now we knew it could happen. And it's the physics of the cloud is what we were studying in there, which then looking back gave us a lot of information about what happened in Herculaneum and Pompeii, which got struck by some of the later surge clouds. And these clouds are very, very powerful. The World Trade Center cloud, as it surged out between 120 and down to 100 and down to 80 miles an hour, if you were caught by that cloud with all the debris in it at 80 miles an hour, it was fatal. And it ripped up buildings, it flattened cars. Many of the effects that we see in Pompeii and Herculaneum, including the very strange shock cocoon effect, where something can be totally disintegrated in contact with this force, with this cloud, and yet 3 feet away, delicate things survive perfectly intact. We see that at Herculaneum also.
You, in your book, you call 9/11 the American Vesuvius. This is the book is Ghosts of Vesuvius, A New Look at the Last Days of Pompeii, How Towers Fall, and Other Strange Connections. Charlie, what is a collapse column?
That is the entire mass of debris as it's falling in a column toward the ground. And in the case of Vesuvius, all it required was probably as you have this jet going aimed directly at the sky, it's eroding the throat of the volcano. And at some point, it gets too wide and the eruption stalls for a moment, and then you get everything collapsing down and moving toward the ground. And this happened six times throughout the eruption of Vesuvius. And it can be that it gets too wide to sustain the eruption for a few seconds, or that there's an avalanche into the throat of the volcano and it kind of hiccups and stalls. And then you get the column collapse, the surge cloud, and the surge cloud is what becomes especially dangerous.
I'm looking at the
in fact,
the
about 300 of the people who perished on 9/11 had gotten safely away from the towers, and were watching from nearby when the surge cloud from the collapse of the very first tower that collapsed, when it caught them on the streets.
I'm looking at the black cloud itself that came out of Vesuvius between the first day and the second day. And the black cloud settled especially on Pompeii and only a piece of it in Herculaneum. Is that black cloud, does that represent the superheated air, all of that cloud, or is that ash?
No, that cloud is just a gentle snow of pumice and ash, and the wind was blowing rather gently toward the east. And that's why Pompeii was getting all this dust and ash building up. And many of the buildings that were destroyed in Pompeii were from 4, 5, 6 feet of ash, which is basically rock, and crushing the tops of the buildings. And all this time, into about 1 in the morning, if you were in Herculaneum at night, you would have been looking up and still seeing the stars, but you would have seen the whole sky blocked out in the direction of Pompeii if you looked east.
But it
was scary enough, and there was enough quaking of the ground and enough noise that people were evacuating Herculaneum, even though there was no ash there. They were getting out of there.
And that's what the Praetorian Guard presumably was doing. Now, about that ash cloud, it has covered Pompeii. It has covered parts of Herculaneum. Are we still to discover things under the buried ash cloud of the buildings? Are there still things in there?
Well, Herculaneum is the most amazing place because the surge cloud that hit it was about 5, maybe up to 6 times the boiling point of water. And that means that if there was a piece of wood, and in fact at the suburban baths we found wood where there were termites in it, and instantly that wood burned through, fossilized the termites. And then you have other surge clouds that came over, and Herculaneum is buried under 60 feet of ash that fused and turned into rock. So even though the heat was much greater in Herculaneum, the level of preservation is amazing, much better than in Pompeii. In Herculaneum, if you see wood, you're not looking at a fossil impression of the wood. You're looking at the actual wood itself preserved. And there's a whole library preserved in Herculaneum that we are just beginning to be able to have the technology to read.
And in that library, we can speculate, are the lost Greek texts that we've only had references to in the Middle Ages, correct?
Right. It's a very large library, and we have from Roman texts that did keep getting copied. But we have to bear in mind that more than 99.9% of what was written, all copies of it have been lost over the centuries. And so there are papers that are referred to. For instance, Emperor Claudius was a historian, and all of his history books are lost. Some of them may be in that library. Even very early, the canonical and early versions of apocryphal scripture may actually be in there, because we know that Paul visited Herculaneum. He visited some of the nearby towns of Vesuvius and found that the early Christians were already there with their books.
We now are told that there's more excavation going on the beach of Herculaneum, which is underwater now because the waters have risen since these days, and the excavations are going slowly. Do we expect to find any more of those rescue soldiers, Charlie? Because the man was, he died a hero.
There's much more to be found because only 1/3 of Herculaneum has been excavated. And if you only have one day in the area, even though Herculaneum is smaller than Pompeii, I would say go to Herculaneum, because places in Pompeii that are as well preserved as places in Herculaneum, where one part of the cloud that went through Pompeii actually was very superheated along this one river of what we call the Snakehead's effect. But all of Herculaneum is that way. And in Pompeii, those places are not open to the public. In Herculaneum, they are. The excellently preserved buildings up to the second story, beautifully, beautifully preserved.
Charles Pellegrino, the author and explorer. The book is Ghosts of Vesuvius, A New Look at the Last Days of Pompeii, How Towers Fall, and Other Strange Connections. As we emerge from the pandemic and as Italy reopens, it's certainly highly recommended to take time to go to Herculaneum and Pompeii and Vesuvius and Naples to view what was a moment in time, 79 AD, August or October, we're not sure. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.